Sustainable Idaho is a collaboration between the Portneuf Resource Council and the ISU Sustainability Club.
Welcome to Sustainable Idaho, the show where we explore the economic, societal, and environmental implications of sustainability within Idaho. I'm Scott Greaves.
And I'm Rachel McGovern.
For the last 2 weeks, Rachel and I have been exploring the FMC Corporation's storage of hazardous waste on the Shoshone-Bannock Tribal Reservation. We learned that the FMC is an agricultural science company, which operated a phosphorus plant on the reservation between 1949 and 2002.
However, FMC's plant operation created a lot of hazardous chemical waste. We learned from the Environmental Protection Agency that the site still houses 20 million tons of elemental phosphorus or phosphorus byproducts in waste storage ponds. If unmanaged, the waste presents a threat to both people and the environment.
We also learned that a complex legal battle between the FMC Corporation and the Shoshone-Bannock tribes over the storage of the hazardous waste has risen all the way to the US Supreme Court. The FMC Corporation were paying an annual $1.5 million permitting fee to be allowed to store their waste on the reservation. However, when the FMC closed their plant in 2002, they believed that they were no longer required to pay this annual $1.5 million fee. The Shoshone-Bannock tribes had a very different interpretation of their agreement, and what ensued was a multi-decadal legal struggle where the FMC questioned the tribal authority to impose the annual permitting fee on the non-Indian corporation. Ultimately, after decisions from the tribal, district, appeals, and the US Supreme Court, the Shoshone-Bannock tribes won the day, and the FMC Corporation was ordered to pay nearly $20 million in unpaid annual permitting fees.
But with the hazardous waste still stored on the reservation, what does all this mean moving forward?
Last week, we learned from the EPA that the FMC site is designated as a Superfund site. A Superfund site is a legally recognized polluted area. We spoke to lead tribal attorney, Mr. Bill Bacon, about the environmental and health considerations at the site.
So this site out there, it's on the NPL list. To get on the NPL list, which stands for the National Priority List, you have to be the baddest of the bad. You just aren't a regular Superfund site. You're an evil Superfund site. And that's on the NPL site, NPL list, that site out there. It's one of the baddest of the bad in the United States.
We continued by asking tribal attorney Mr. Bacon more about the environmental health challenges at the site.
When I first started on this case, probably in 2005, I asked the EPA lawyer, why are you so sure that the groundwater at the FMC site cannot migrate to the Portneuf River? He said, oh, because it's clay. And I'm going, I don't think there's any clay out there. I think it's basically sand, because this whole area was the river bottom of Lake Bonneville. And so a couple of years later, sure, lo and behold, the water's now traveling towards the Portneuf River, all these contaminants. So it morphed in that respect. We had to prove that the heavy metals, the arsenic, and the selenium, all those hazardous wastes, were headed towards the Portneuf River via groundwater.
On their website, the FMC Corporation confirms that their plant operations have caused a level of groundwater contamination. The FMC report that arsenic is the primary contaminant of concern, with arsenic present in both the shallow aquifer beneath the site and in the Portneuf River in the area between the Swanson Road Spring and the Batiste Spring. The FMC admits that the arsenic levels in the aquifer and in that particular stretch of the Portneuf River exceed federal drinking water standards. However, groundwater is not the only concern.
Another morphage that took place was in these 22 Olympic-sized pools full of all this hazardous waste, they guaranteed us that that phosphine could not become reactive and ignitable. That before they put the ponds out there, ducks would land in the ponds, get up, fly, and blow up. Because when phosphine hits the air, it blows up. In fact, bombs. In World War II, phosphine was one of the primary things of making bombs. So they said, because we've covered these 22 Olympic-sized swimming pools with dirt, air can't get to the ponds and can't react. Well, that didn't hold true either. Probably in about 2010, one of our employees were traveling down the interstate and saw all the smoke coming out of the earth and took pictures and sent them to EPA. And boy, they came out very quickly. And they detected three deadly gases that were being emitted by these ponds. So there's another morph. No one ever anticipated these ponds would emit these deadly gases. No one ever thought that the groundwater, the contaminated groundwater, would ever leave FMC's property.
Again, the FMC's online statements support Mr. Bacon's claims about the release of dangerous phosphine gases. The FMC concedes that phosphine gas was released into the air from the uncapped waste ponds. However, following the introduction of engineered caps to those ponds, the FMC suggests that the amount of phosphine gas generation is greatly reduced. This is because the waste requires the presence of water or oxygen to react and form that phosphine gas. Additionally, the FMC states that while some phosphine gas will build up under the engineered caps, three gas extraction and treatment systems are in place to remove and prevent the release of that gas to the ambient air.
We asked Mr. Bacon if the phosphine gas has harmed or killed anybody, and if the site continues to pose a threat, even with the introduction of caps to the waste ponds.
I think we should break that down into two timetables. One, prior to the plant closure, yes, lots of people have gotten injured because of the creation of the phosphate and the gases. And post-closure of the plant, what we have are those gases. The gases that are created are heavier than air, so they follow the contour of the land. And at this point, I don't know of any testing that has been done, because we just recently won our lawsuit, any air testing that is being done at the level where these gases are, off their property. That needs to be done.
So even after decades of legal struggles and environmental remediation efforts, there remains important questions to be answered. Arguably, the most important of those questions is the waste ever going to be removed from the site? Currently, following its policies to limit risk to acceptable levels, the EPA is attempting to monitor and manage the site, but these actions do not include the removal of the hazardous waste. However, it's the position of the tribes that they want the waste removed to protect their community.
Finally, we asked Mr. Bacon what he thinks is going to happen next, first with FMC's annual permitting fee, and second with EPA's refusal to remove the hazardous waste.
Here's what's going to happen. Right now, they have to pay us the $1.5 million a year for as long as the waste out there remains hazardous. The half-life on the chemicals that are out there is 10,000 years. So that's 1.5 for 10,000 years, okay? That's on the waste permit side. On the EPA cleanup side, right now, the remedy that EPA has allowed is the cover-up, not the removal. My client, the tribes, we have always pushed for removal. You wanna stop paying the 1.5, then take your hazardous waste and get out of here. But EPA has to let them do that. And right now, the remedy that EPA has approved is the cover-up, not the removal. So we may have litigation, not against FMC. Our litigation would be against EPA for allowing that remedy.
Thanks to lead tribal attorney Bill Bacon for joining us for Sustainable Idaho this week. Catch Sustainable Idaho every Tuesday morning at 7:35 a.m.
Sustainable Idaho airs Tuesday morning at 7:35. Thank you to our partners, the Portneuf Resource Council and ISU Sustainability Club. Links to this and past programs can be found at kisu.org.